This is KJZZ, your news and information station in Phoenix and across Arizona. I'm Tiara Vian, and here are this week's stories you don't want to miss. It's the podcast designed to catch you up on some highlights from around the region. Thanks for listening. Here are a few of the stories for the week of August 5th, 2024. Since 2005, the Veterans Administration has seen a 154% increase in the number of women accessing mental health care. During the Disabled American Veterans National Convention in Phoenix this week, the advocacy group called for more investments in mental health for women veterans. Christina Estes reports on the data and personal stories.
When Naomi Mathis returned home from Iraq in 2003, she didn't feel like she belonged in her own skin. The Air Force veteran was tormented by the sounds of gunfire and bombs and grieving the death of her friend and colleague. Diagnosed with PTSD, Mathis got by without therapy until a terrifying experience after the birth of her son.
My baby was laying there on the bed. I started having really bad thoughts, let's just say that. That scared me. It scared me into seeking help.
She medically retired, and although Mathis says the Air Force did her right, she felt abandoned without her military job.
After everything I did, my blood, literal blood, sweat, and tears, losing someone, going through all of that trauma, and here I am with nothing.
Mathis found a new mission with the Disabled American Veterans. She worked closely on the DAV's report examining women veterans' mental health and shared findings at the convention.
The risk of suicide death among women veterans with active substance use disorder is more than twice what it is for men.
Juliet Taylor recalled drinking too much and feeling disconnected from her children after 11 years as a combat service member in Iraq. Taylor felt ashamed and didn't know where to turn.
So I went to work and just crashed and burned at work, on the verge of suicide many times, trying to figure out, what am I going to do? How am I going to do it? When am I going to do it? What am I going to do with these kids? Who's going to keep the kids?
Taylor credits a fellow veteran for helping her get help and a doctor who took the time to care.
She was working at the women's clinic, and she, you know, brought me and sat me down and started talking to me about my drinking, about different things, and then really said, this is what you need to do. And then I also saw how my children changed when I started getting better.
The DAV lists suicide prevention as its highest clinical priority. Among veterans using the VA, 1 in 3 women report experiencing military sexual trauma, or MST. That encompasses sexual harassment and sexual assault. But Mathis says the algorithm responsible for flagging high suicide risk doesn't screen for MST.
Potentially allowing that veteran to leave their primary care appointment without getting the help that they need.
She says the VA is working on fixing the algorithm. The DAV wants every VA medical center to have a full-time coordinator focused on providing proper screening and outreach for military sexual trauma. The report calls for all providers to be trained on identifying suicide risks and intervention tactics, including gun safety. More than half of women veteran suicides involve firearms.
We should not lose another battle sister to this epidemic.
Army combat veteran Kim Hubers has struggled with her mental and physical health since returning from Iraq 20 years ago. Living in rural South Dakota, she often has to travel hours for medical appointments. But Hubers is optimistic because she's seen how the DAV's advocacy is making a difference.
Senator Thune from South Dakota, him and his staff got a hold of the Women Veterans Report. And they took that and contacted our local VA medical center in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And the director there was able to use the information from the report to get a grant to make the VA in Sioux Falls, South Dakota better for female veterans. So I am really proud of my state.
Veterans encourage others to share the report with elected officials, community groups, family, and friends. Huber says every conversation counts.
That's healing, that's helpful, that gives strength, that gives support.
Discussing their most personal, painful moments takes courage. These women hope their bravery will make mental health care more accessible and effective for future veterans. Christina Estes, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In Tribal Natural Resources, which is supported in part by a grant from the Katina Foundation. On August 8th, a year ago, President Biden declared a new national monument on almost a million acres near the Grand Canyon. This executive action marked the fifth time he has done so since taking office. The issue of public land management, especially in the West, has long been a partisan issue, with Democrats aligned with indigenous communities in pushing conservation, while Republicans back deregulation, often in support of energy and mining interests. As Gabriel Piacerazio reports, the future of national monuments could be decided by voters from the battleground state of Arizona.
America's natural wonders are our nation's heart and soul.
Biden came to the Grand Canyon last August after consulting over a dozen tribes forming the Grand Canyon Tribal Coalition.
So today I'm proud to use my authority under the Antiquities Act to protect almost 1 million acres of public land around Grand Canyon National Park as a new national monument.
This sprawling landscape surrounding one of the seven wonders of the world became known as Baj Nuwajo Itaktuveni, or the ancestral footprints of the Grand Canyon National Monument.
And that's why, from day one, I've taken historic steps to conserve our natural treasures for all ages. We've already restored protection for three national monuments gutted by the last administration, two not so far from here in Utah, the Grand Staircase and Bear's Ears.
It's been a tug-of-war between Democratic and Republican presidents. Barack Obama designated 1.3 million acres for Bears Ears National Monument back in 2016. A year later, Donald Trump shrank it to 200,000 acres.
And that is why I'm here today. Because some people think that the natural resources of Utah should be controlled by a small handful of very distant bureaucrats located in Washington. And guess what? They're wrong.
Arizona Republicans, like House Speaker Ben Thoma, agree.
What is it that we're exactly trying to protect? It could be anything, really, that justifies a federal takeover of our land.
Arizona is home to 19 national monuments, more than any other state in the U.S. They comprise 3.7 million acres of federally protected lands, or 5% of the state's land mass.
When they take so much land off the table, it does affect the state. Sometimes a mine will be by far the biggest taxpayer in a whole region.
That's why Thoma and Arizona Senate President Warren Peterson filed a lawsuit earlier this year, arguing that Biden overreached. They called it a land grab. That comment offended Arizona House Democrat May Peshlakai.
The land grab started in 1492.
She's Diné and from Cameron on the Navajo Nation.
And we were here on this continent. We're always told by our ancestors, you don't own this land. The land owns you.
The Republican policy agenda has been to roll back sweeping public land protections, even calling on Congress to repeal the Antiquities Act, a 1906 law giving presidents the authority to declare national monuments to protect cultural and natural resources.
The Republican Party in Arizona followed lockstep with former President Trump, who had stated, drill, baby, drill. Nothing is sacred to him. It will expand to anything worth a penny, including uranium.
She's referring to the Pinon Plain Mine near Grand Canyon National Park. It opened within the monument several months after Biden's designation, grandfathered by an 1872 mining law. Polling has shown strong bipartisan support among Arizonans for public lands. A 2023 poll funded by Grand Canyon Trust found that 96% of Democrats and 84% of Republicans approve of presidents continuing to designate national monuments. Though Biden isn't on the ballot, Peshlakai says the Democratic presidential nominee, Kamala Harris, has her vote to pick up where he left off.
As a woman, of course, an indigenous woman, I totally support Kamala Harris, and I really do hope that she is our next president.
But if Trump wins in November, he could again undo his predecessor's work, and that's exactly what Thoma is hoping for in Arizona.
So, yes, I would call on President Trump to limit it, and if President Trump were to be elected, and I believe he will be, then I do expect that it would be limited significantly.
Gabriel Piatarazzo, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
And this is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. Thanks for listening. You can test your state smarts with our new A to Z quiz. There are two quizzes each week starting on Tuesdays and Fridays. And bonus, you can grab the new KJZZ Play sticker at play.kjzz.org. In business news, two competing ballot measures that will affect wages for tipped workers will be decided in November, despite efforts by backers of one measure to throw the other off the ballot. Cameron Sanchez reports.
Raise the Wage Arizona backs a measure that would increase the minimum wage and ensure workers can also take home tips in addition. In a lawsuit, the group also argued that a separate measure on minimum wage, referred to voters by Republican lawmakers, should be barred from ballots. Lawmakers called it the Tipped Workers Protection Act. It would allow workers to be paid 25% less than the minimum wage if they also take home a minimum amount of pay when including tips. Attorney Jim Barton argued the title is misleading, but a Maricopa County Superior Court judge disagreed.
The judge's decision says that it's not deceptive to call an act that does nothing to protect tipped workers a Tipped Worker Protection Act. And I don't understand how the judge can say that.
Barton says his client will appeal the ruling. Cameron Sanchez, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In education news, Arizona sent nearly $29 million in funding for low-achieving K-12 schools back to the federal government after schools missed deadlines to use the money. Wayne Shutsky reports.
The Arizona Republic first reported the State Department of Education had to return a portion of school improvement funds from 2021 and 2022 because schools missed a September 2023 deadline to obligate all of the money. Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs blamed Republican State Superintendent Tom Horn for failing to help schools meet that deadline.
The bottom line is that it is unconscionable that students that are struggling are now missing out on additional assistance because we just, like, forfeited these funds.
But Horn blamed the previous administration of Democratic Superintendent Kathy Hoffman. The department claimed the money in question had to be allocated by July 2022 while Hoffman was still in office. ADE officials say a holdover staffer from Hoffman's administration failed to notify superiors about the impending deadline before leaving office in March 2023. Wayne Shutsky, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
From KJZZ's The Show, a deeper look at the issues and trucking worries of uranium mining. Here's co-host Lauren Gilger.
There is one uranium mine near the Grand Canyon, and the company that runs it just started hauling the product across the Navajo Nation's land last week. That prompted quick and passionate objections from the Navajo Nation, and now Governor Katie Hobbs has stepped in to negotiate a compromise. And it's all happening in front of a global backdrop of growing demand for uranium, as the Biden administration and other world powers have promised to triple nuclear capacity in their effort to fight climate change. KJZZ's Indigenous Affairs reporter Gabriel Piatarazzo has been following the story and joins us now in studio to talk more about it. Good morning, Gabe.
Morning, Lauren.
Okay, so let's start with some of the background here. We're talking about the Pinyon Plain Mine. This is maybe 10 miles from the Grand Canyon. I know you've been in it. Why was this mine allowed to operate so close to the Grand Canyon to begin with? Like, that's been banned for a long time, right?
For sure. To give you a bit of context, it's actually on Forest Service lands within the Kaibab National Forest. Operation actually hadn't started until around December, January, at the start of this year, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so the company has been extracting uranium ore. They've been building to this moment to contract essentially trucks that would then take it off the Forest Service lands and through its pre-approved haul route, which encompasses the Navajo Nation on its way to Blanding, Utah. Interestingly enough, this mine is the only one that is operational near the Grand Canyon because of Biden's national monument designation from last August, actually. Right. And so that ceased temporarily uranium claims in the future. This one was grandfathered in by the 1872 mining law.
Yeah. Okay. So they've started mining, and then just last week they start hauling this uranium, as you said, on a pre-approved route, and they haul it across the Navajo Nation's land. This is really controversial, it turns out. So tell us why. Like, what are the environmental, the health concerns related to moving this product across Navajo land?
I think the biggest challenge from everyone that I'm hearing and speaking to is this legacy when it comes to uranium mining. Specifically, we have over 500 abandoned uranium mines that have yet to be cleaned up by the federal government. This is part of an older generation, an era of uranium mining, Energy Fuels, the company says. but that legacy is still impacting people today. I think that's the biggest fear and concern. We also saw this summer RECA, the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, expiring, which provided compensation to those who were affected by uranium and downwinders. And so this history hasn't been resolved for the people there. But the other issue is they're trucking through areas that are somewhat populated. And so the concern is that if there's dust that comes off those vehicles, that's the major issue at hand. Obviously, if there's a road accident, that's also another concern. Emergency responses, how prompt are they to answer? But I think the biggest concerns are the dust. From the scientists who I've spoken to, the handling of uranium ore, which I did at Pinyon Plain Mine, is relatively low for the radioactive risks that are associated to it. But it, what matters is if you breathe in those dust particles, that's how people got the lung diseases that we saw during the 1940s, 50s, 60s when the uranium mining on the Navajo Nation was really bad.
Right. Okay. So what are Navajo officials saying about this and why they do not want this to happen?
Well, going back to 2012, we had the Radioactive and Related Substances Equipment, Vehicles, Persons, and Materials Transportation Act. That's a mouthful.
Yes, it is.
It's basically their 2012 law that the Navajo Nation Council passed, and it basically banned the hauling of uranium, excluding uranium waste materials that are being remediated on the land through the reservation, essentially. And so leaders like Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin, who I spoke to last Tuesday, just hours after the trucking began, when he was notified, he had this to say.
We gave you right-of-ways to build state routes, but it's still our lands. These are the boundaries of the Navajo Nation, and that's what you respect first. Don't take advantage of that and not even give us a heads up. So you are guests. If you're not going to uphold and respect our laws, we want nothing to do with you.
So it sounds like, Gabe, that for them, this is also about tribal sovereignty.
Exactly. I think that from the people that I hear and speak to, leaders, they see it as their laws aren't being respected. Even though they gave up the right of ways for these state and federal highways to be built and constructed through them, as President Nigrin said, you know, they're seen as guests.
What has the company had to say about all of this? Have they responded?
They have. They've expressed that unlike what the county, Coconino County, and neighboring tribes like Navajo Nation and the Havasupai have claimed, that the company promised to give a 2 weeks notice ahead of the hauling, they expressed that they're not legally required to, nor did they give such a promise to those stakeholders along the haul route. And I spoke to Energy Fuels President and CEO Mark Chalmers recently on this issue of transparency with another tribe that's near the White Mesa Mill, Mountain Ute tribe, who had expressed concern that they don't know what's being hauled to the mill and they're not notified about when it occurs. And this is what he had to say when asked about transparency and whether they should notify the public about these shipments.
To notify the public of every shipment that is being made in and out would take a lot of work, and I think people would get bored.
Okay, so now we have Governor Katie Hobbs stepping in late last week, and she's got the company basically to agree to pause this hauling of uranium and negotiate some kind of agreement with the Navajo Nation. What happened here? Like, was this who we expected to step in?
Certainly not. I was not expecting Governor Katie Hobbs on Thursday evening to send out a statement saying that they brokered this trucking truce. I don't think anyone was, really, except those who were in the room when it happened. But what is interesting is this isn't really entirely enforceable by any sort of legal statute whatsoever. The state has minimal control over what it can and can't do. Governor Katie Hobbs does have some sort of authorities to review mining permits and claims and the aquifer protection permit that Pinyon Plain Mine has to operate. And maybe that, what we're hearing from some sources, might be a way that they're bringing them to the table, so to speak, to make sure that they're in compliance with their standards that they tout. But otherwise, she doesn't have much authority, nor does the state really, in managing or overseeing this process, since this is a federal jurisdictional issue.
So if they do come to an agreement here between the company and the tribe, what might that look like? Like, what are the possibilities? Do you think that this will be the end of it?
Certainly, this isn't the end of this discussion, this conversation. The Navajo Nation for the last few months has been working through its attorney general's office to establish regulations that would guide how the nation would require the company Energy Fuels to haul through its reservation. One of the major concerns has been what times. A big concern is schools and whether there's buses on the highways. Another issue would be establishing inspection stations and sites where Navajo Nation police and or other officials can go and inspect these vehicles. They want to establish fees, which would make it more expensive for them to haul the uranium ore through the reservation, possibly to find an alternative route.
Are you expecting this to end up in court still, Gabe?
The Navajo Nation president, Boo Nigrin, he said to me recently in our call, he says, we'll see you in court. Mm-hmm. And to me, that implies that the federal court will have to come in and possibly adjudicate on this issue. There's been talks that basically the Navajo Nation is going to test this tribal law that they have and to see to what effect do they have the sovereignty to do so, mm-hmm. to enforce it.
All right. Lots to watch for then. KJZZ's Indigenous Affairs reporter Gabriel Pietrazio joining us. Gabe, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
In politics news, a group led by a former advisor to former President Donald Trump is suing Maricopa County Recorder Stephen Richer. They claim he's failed to check for and purge voter rolls of those who are not citizens. From the politics desk, here's Cameron Sanchez again.
America First Legal claims Richer is disobeying state and federal laws by not using tools at his disposal to find out if any of the tens of thousands of people in Maricopa County who have signed up to vote using a federal form are ineligible to cast ballots. Federal forms, unlike Arizona state voter registration forms, don't require proof of citizenship. It's possibly the first of many lawsuits against Arizona county officials. The lawsuit was preceded by a letter to Richer threatening to sue if actions weren't taken. Similar letters were also sent to the recorders in Arizona's other 14 counties. Richer says his office is, quote, very zealous in maintaining the voter rolls in compliance with the law. Cameron Sanchez, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
And finally, in Fronteras News, Customs and Border Protection is expanding the locations in Mexico where migrants can schedule a CBP-1 appointment along the U.S.-Mexico border. From the Fronteras desk in Tucson, Elisa Resnick reports the government-run CBP-1 app is the primary way for migrants to begin the asylum process in the U.S.
There are 1,450 daily CBP-1 appointments available at a handful of ports of entry border-wide. Right now, migrants as far south as Mexico City can apply to schedule one. CBP says they'll soon be able to schedule further south in the states of Chiapas and Tabasco, along the border with Guatemala. Rafael Velasquez, Mexico director with the International Rescue Committee, says Chiapas has seen a rise in violence from organized crime.
We used to be told that people in the state, we will hear something along the lines of, Chiapas is poor but stable. Right now, Chiapas is neither stable and is definitely more poor.
Velasquez says without clear information about CBP-1 updates, migrants could fall victim to organized crime and scams. Elisa Resnick, KJZZ News, Tucson.
And this has been the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast, made possible in part by Helios Education and Alliance Bank, the Vitalist Health Foundation, the Intel Corporation and Beach Fleischman, the Arizona Community Foundation, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Thank you for listening to KJZZ and for your generous support. I'm Tiara Vian. This is KJZZ, your news and information station.